good afternoon. This is Rob.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
It's Travis. I've got Lewis and Pam here, and Dad had a he was tied up, so he's not going to be able to make it.
Okay, terrific.
And Lori Potocic's also here. Chris has another call that he needs to be on, so.
Okay.
Just me over here.
So, how is the world?
Good.
Good.
Good. Got the two state teams winning the weekend.
Yeah, that is
over in Alabama. Everybody's happy.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I know. Well, we we always love watching Alabama. I've been to many games, fortunately.
Really?
Yeah, I've got Jim Burke from Birmingham is a friend of mine, and I so we fly around with him and go to the games and have fun, and you know, so I've been indoctrinated.
Okay, so you're on board. You're with the process.
I know. I'm with the process, exactly.
Yeah, all right, good. Good, good.
I love the process.
Yeah. I bet you
I teach a process, so
exactly.
So I get it, you know.
Uh-huh.
So bring
on your world.
How is I just finished my book, so I'm really happy. I was writing.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What's it called?
It's called The Supernova Multiplier. So it's kind of everything I've learned in the last 11 years since I wrote the last book. And it took me about, you know, I'm a procrastinator. So unfortunately, it took me about 2.5 years to write it. And, but it worked.
Yeah, that's good. All congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. I got some. It's going to be very helpful to you guys, to anybody taking the course. I've got, you know, a million stories in there, and everything that I teach, it basically teaches you guys, you know, why it works and how it, you know, why everything that, you know, here's a strategy, right? But
yeah.
here's why it works. So.
Cool. When's it hit shelves?
Hopefully you guys are going to be in there. I still got room for some great stories. So, tell me some great. Actually, you guys are really, you're awesome. So, you know, I love hearing the stories and how it's working for you. And you know, I've got enough good impressions. What I need is specific stories of, you know, we tried this strategy and it worked. So
right.
To me, that's the new game of, you know, what I did was interview people specifically because I knew they had worked, had made great success with centers of influence, or they had created a mastermind group, or they had, you know, they were really good at social networking. And, some people are really good at internal marketing. You know, they buy up other teams because they have a good brand. They, you know, people like, I mean, that's one of the things that I love to hear is that people watch you, and when they see that you have a process, you're taking good care of your clients, they want you to handle their accounts. And that to me is, you know, a big testimonial. So, anyway.
When will the book be out?
Good question. It's really, you know, the easy work is done of writing. The hardest thing is to figure out what the book is going to look like, what it should contain. Then you organize it into chapters. You know, you got to write the introduction, transition from the other book so people know why you wrote it. And then you and then you and then you got to fill it in. You got to make it interesting, compelling to keep reading, and then you got to have interesting meaning. You got to have enough good stories in there that people go, you know, that's great. That I can do that, you know. And so they'll want to try it.
Yeah.
The other book was really about how it came about, Supernova, and the rationale for why we did what we did. This book is more about the how-tos, you know, how to grow. Because, you know, Supernova is always a growth strategy, but unfortunately, a lot of people did Supernova, but then failed to grow. And part of it is because they were uncomfortable with some of the more up-to-date strategies on how to grow. They were good cold callers. They're good at giving seminars. They really didn't know how to network. They didn't know how to build, you know, solid centers of influence and ways of networking in their communities. Most of them do it because they just do it. They're unconsciously competent. They're good at it, but they don't know what they're doing. And therefore, it's hard to repeat what you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
So this will help them to become consciously competent. They'll see something, they'll read about it, and then they'll say, oh, yeah, I do that. Maybe I should do more of that. Maybe I should do it in more of a process rather than just doing it whenever I feel like it or whenever somebody calls me. So that's kind of the game. So this is week 12. And in week 12, we cover leadership, which I just wrote that chapter. And in leadership, there's some, I just had a team change their leader, you know, kind of after 2 years, they kind of exchanged roles and responsibilities. And the new leader called me and said, what am I supposed to do as a leader? I kind of built an outline for him. And then I used that as kind of my strategy for the, the chapter on leadership. So it was helpful to redo it. Anyway.
So what does a leader do?
Well, good question. I mean, in the book, I kind of outline it, but I don't do it as specifically as I should. I talk about failure points for leadership, kind of what not to do. We talk about agendas, keeping track of what's going on, but it's pretty vague. So the workshop, the workbook is not specific enough. So here's what a leader should do. All right, there's five things that I wrote down. So a leader needs to establish the why, the how, the where, the when, and the what. So the why is your purpose statement. Why are you doing what you're doing? The mission statement is the how, which would include your values. And the what, when, and where is your vision statement. So just to go over that again, the purpose statement is why are you doing it? So our purpose at Supernova is very simple, and it should be about one sentence. So the purpose of Supernova is to improve the client experience worldwide. So as long as we're improving the client experience, we really don't care how it gets done. So people say to me, Rob, that guy, that coach is stealing all your material. And I go, good. I hope he does. And I hope he teaches it. And I hope everybody adopts it. Because if they adopt my process, then the world will be a better place. So it's kind of like Saban. Everybody knows what Saban does. It's just hard to be Saban. and it's hard to be you guys, because doing it and knowing how to do it are two different things. So you need to come up with a purpose statement. My personal purpose statement is to release the human potential by choosing growth over fear, and so by doing, help others to do the same. Okay, so that's a little longer, but it's most human beings fail to reach their potential, release their genius, to release the book that's within them, the music, whatever's in them that should be in the world. They fail to release it because of fear. So my mission is to choose growth over fear at every stage of my life. And by setting a good example, I'll help others to make those same decisions. So whenever you're wondering, you know, should I do this? Should I call on that center of influence? Should I form that mastermind group? Most of the things that are holding you back are fear. And Larry Wilson said it best. You should always play to win. And he defines playing to win as going as far as you can with all that you've got. And there is no losing when you play to win. When you have a setback, you just learn and grow from it. But there is no losing. You're just constantly evolving. When you play not to lose, the best you're going to do is, he always says, not die. You're never going to win when you play not to lose. You're just protecting yourself. So you know, a lot of financial advisors are fear-based, and they live in the fear zone, and they're constantly thinking people are stealing their accounts, and they're constantly protecting them and worried all the time. Whereas people that are confident optimists are very open. They believe that the world is a world of plenty versus scarcity, and that there's plenty for everybody. And they have an obligation to the world to grow and release their potential so that they make the world a better place. So that's the purpose statement. The mission should incorporate your values. It doesn't have to have the name of the values in it, but a good exercise is to go through and ask everybody to list their values and then see what values you have in common. And you know, list them from 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, depending on how many you have. The most important first, and then the ones that are in common in the top 5, you make that part of your value, your mission statement. So I'll give you an example. Our mission when I was working was to boldly go where no person's gone before and joyfully share the map. So that doesn't sound like financial advisor at all, does it? Or a regional director. But the point is to boldly go where no person's gone before takes into consideration a lot of values. So it's risk-taking. That was one of our values. Take risks. Explore. Be creative. And then when you've done that, share that with others. So long before the book Give and Take came out, we were talking about giving, sharing, and helping. Not for any reason, not for a monetary reason, but for the sake of all of us, so that we'd be healthier, happier, and more productive people. And that was it. That was my whole mission statement. And people would repeat it all the time. And our purpose statement was the purpose statement that I mentioned before, choosing growth over fear. And one time I had my admin manager, service manager at the time, challenge me on it and say, Rob, you're choosing, it was my daughter that said that. My daughter said to me one time before I was writing my first book, Rob, you're choosing fear over growth. Yeah, you're choosing fear over growth. I said, what? She said, yeah, you're not writing your book because you're afraid. I said, I am not. She said, yes, you are. Now get working. That makes you happy. Going out and speaking, you love that, and you need your book. As you said, you wanted to write it, so go write it. So I did. So she was kind of my muse, and she helped me on this book, too. So anyway, we all have a book in us. We all have some music. We all have some poetry. We all have a lot in us that we never share with the world, and it's mostly because we're afraid. So today, let's talk about taking risk and boldly going where no person's gone before and then sharing it with me. So what have you done that's been bold and courageous and in the world of supernova marketing and growth?
I think the main thing we've done is started, like we did at the start, is pair back accounts that, you know, may have some connection to us that are not paying us anything and we're wasting our time servicing. So to me, that's the biggest step I know our group has made is, as you discussed earlier, having to let things go, which is not easy for us to do, especially in a small community. So
right.
that's been the biggest step and hopefully the most beneficial step we take.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's kind of been a fear of ours that we've kind of starting to overcome. I mean, we still are not completely doing it, but we got rid of a client last week just because he wouldn't switch over to managed and was a $300,000 IRA. We met with him, he's been a client for probably 15, 20 years, and, you know, we're just starting to do those kind of things where we kind of were very reserved about that in the past.
How's it feel?
It feels good once you do it. I mean, it's kind of like it's not as big of a deal as you think. I mean, he wanted to stay at Morgan Stanley, so we just switched him over to a younger broker in the office.
Yeah.
And no big deal.
It's no big deal, right? He's fine.
Right.
He's happy. He's not having to pay a fee.
Exactly.
You know, you're happy because you don't have to waste time.
Right.
So it's, you know, everybody, and you want to do that with planning, too. Make planning one of those minimum requirements. You know, I love you, but if you're not going to, you know, we're not going
right.
to take us seriously and let us help you with your life, your whole life plan, then, you know, probably somebody else would be a better fit for you.
But I totally agree with you. The fact that you have all these reservations, especially when picking up the phone, that you need to overcome sometimes that I struggle with, but I think everybody does. But that is tough.
The other one is to get all of their assets. So, you know, fee-based, all their assets, and a financial plan.
Right.
And if you had that with every single client, think about the control that you would have and the confidence that your clientele would have.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they'd be advocates for you guys. You know, not
right.
that they aren't, but they'd be more advocates than they are today. Okay, so that's the first, that's step number one of a leader. Step number two is communicate that on a consistent basis.
Rob, do you find your leaders in each on teams, I mean, are they usually the biggest producers? Or are they usually, I mean, I think last week we kind of maybe shift a little bit of that towards Pam just because she can get on her butts when we're out of line a little bit, you know, and she's probably the most organized of us guys.
Well, here's the here's my suggestion. You,
yeah.
as a leader, you select the people that are best suited for each job. So if that's, you know, in the Navy, we had the commanding officer and then the executive officer. And the executive officer was preparing to become the commanding officer of his own unit, own whatever, ship, squadron, right? So in doing so, he played good cop, bad cop. So the captain, you know, the commanding officer was always a great guy. Everybody loved the captain. Everybody feared the XO because he was a hard ass. He was the guy that kept everybody in line. So just because he wasn't in charge, wasn't, quote, the leader, he was one of the leaders, and he just had a different role and responsibility. And when he became the commanding officer, he became the good guy, and he got his own XO. So the point is not to be played good cop, bad cop. That's not the point. The point is different roles and responsibilities of different people on the team can look like the leader without being the leader. But their role is to set the appointments, is to set the meetings, make sure people are at the meetings, make sure people are prepared for the meetings, and then give a summary of what's, you know, what's happening. So, you know, the XO is the hard ass, but he's not the senior guy.
Right.
He's the one following up. So, yeah, Hammond might be great for, you know, for, I don't know what are the best roles and responsibilities, but we can create the five-star model, but you guys are the ones that have to see what each role is and who's best suited for that role over time, because you may not see it initially.
Right.
Let's see it later on. I would say the single biggest opportunity is leadership, and the single biggest failure on teams is leadership. So if the five-star model and leadership's the most important part of the team, and it's the biggest failure point, it seems to me that would be one of the most dramatic ways to differentiate your team from other teams.
Right.
Okay? Because most people are, I mean, human nature, human psychology says, I'm a pleasure seeker, I don't want confrontation, and I just want to be left alone, okay? But I want to be in a gang. I want to be in a tribe where I feel safe and everybody loves me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we do. That's our natural self. So we need to be something other than our natural self. So our natural self is to gorge ourselves as soon as we get food. So what we need to do is to be good at deferred gratification, one sign of intelligence. So we put off eating all the food at once and save it. Okay? So we need to, as a team, do the things that are difficult, like confrontation, deferred gratification, patience, the things that make human beings intelligent and better than just animals. So having meetings is not fun. Holding people accountable is not fun. The teams that do it are better than the teams that don't. Chris Brooks' team was in my first book. They're fabulous at having effective meetings. That's where we started the stand-up meetings. You can have all stand-up meetings, but he has a stand-up meeting every day for 10 minutes, and it's just a briefing around the CA and what are we doing, how are we doing, you know, what do I need to know about today? And what everybody else? Who's behind? Who's ahead? Who's got time? Who doesn't? Who's being swamped? Et cetera. So is that the role of the leader? No, it's probably the role of the brand manager, the person that's running the schedule, the scheduler for the client appointments, the schedules for the meetings. That's their job to hold that meeting, call that meeting, and get everybody there. The leader shows up, listens, and makes sure that the meeting went on. And if it doesn't go on, that's the leader's job to get the brand manager to get going on it. So what happens is this. The brand manager would do it. They'll do it. They're usually very conscientious. They're scheduling all the client appointments, so they're ready to be efficient and effective. The problem is the leader doesn't necessarily want to have those weekly meetings and those daily meetings. So he or she doesn't follow up on the brand manager, and the brand manager knows the leader doesn't want him, so he or she skips a couple just to test it. And when nobody notices, then she stops scheduling them.
Hey, Rob, I apologize. I've got to jump off here on another call, but Chris and I will dial in and listen to the rest of this. This is good stuff.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Okay, so do you get that? Do you see how that works?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing, you know, whether you have an off-site meeting that you want to have but never get around to it.
Right.
You got to put out that schedule at the beginning of the year. This is when we're going to have our daily meeting, weekly meetings, when we're going to have our monthly meeting, when we're going to have our quarterly meeting, when our semi-annual meeting, and our annual offsite. So everybody's preparing all year for those meetings, and they're really important.
Right.
So that's the communications. I said, you know, communicate the purpose, mission, vision all the time. So, you know, do it in a formal way through the meetings. All right, so the third thing is hold ourselves accountable to each other and help each other. So if one person is breaking down on the team, as the leader, you hold them accountable, but you also help the team hold each other accountable. So it shouldn't be just the leader that has to do this. Everybody in the team should be, quote, the leader. Inspire by example and encouragement and recognition. Recognition is free for the most part. It doesn't cost anything, and it's probably the least known reward that there is. We want to always pay. You know, if somebody does a good job, we want to pay them. That's the easy way. Recognizing them takes some effort and time and thought, but that's the thing that really motivates people. When somebody notices them, recognizes them, and appreciates them, the workplace is a much better place. And that's everybody's role. But the leader's the one that sets the example of recognizing people for doing a good job. So you want to catch people doing things right and reward them in public, and then if you have a problem, you want to hold them accountable in private. So that's where the coaching, the fifth piece of this leadership model is coaching each of the teams, each player on the team individually once a month. So you do a 12-4-2 with each member of the team. So that's the leader doesn't have like one of the roles. He's not in charge of planning, implementation, brand management, marketing. His job or her job is to lead everything and make sure everything is being done. But most importantly is to guide and coach each member of the team by personally helping them to build their plan for their role on the team. So if you're in charge of planning, the leader's job is to make sure that that person has a plan, is doing the plan, and executing on it. And then that's the professional side of things, and then having a personal plan privately to improve themselves personally, become a better public speaker, to get a professional designation, or work out on a better schedule, eat right, you know, whatever. Help them to have a personal plan and a professional plan. So those are the five things that the leader has to do, which is, you know, hard.
Right.
But for me, it was always the most gratifying thing was coaching and helping and listening and learning from people. At the same time, maybe you can add some value to their life, like
right.
coaching. So correct. Is the senior, you know, is the leadership job for the senior most biggest producer? Sometimes absolutely not.
Right.
They don't have any interest in that. So it may be for the second in command. And just like the commanding officer, you know, makes sure everything gets done, but he's really, you know, the head, but the executive officer does the work. So it's kind of, you know, that's I think that's a pretty good model in most teams.
Right. I agree.
So any thoughts on that kind of?
No, I just think we need to figure it out. Like you said, I think our leader is, well, I would think, you know, I think Pam would be the best one to do this.
Be interesting.
Based on what you said, I mean, she would get us all organized. That. But yeah, this has been a great call.
Yeah, it's not, yeah, thank you. It's not something that we, you typically get taught in,
mm-hmm.
in our business. Isn't it funny? Think about it. If leadership is the most important thing on a team, how much time do we spend teaching leadership to our teams? Zero.
Right, yeah.
You know, really. I bet you've never had a meeting on leadership.
Never.
In your office. Never, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you read books on everything else. You probably, you know, don't read books on leadership. So the question is, how are you going to get that stuff if you don't hire somebody like me? You're just not.
Right.
That's true. So,
you're right.
Yeah. And that's why people come to me all the time and say, I just was made leader of the team, and what the hell do I do? So that's why we, you know, we said, process, right? Here, five-star model. You got your offensive coach, you got your defensive coach, and you got your other coaches, and everybody knows their roles and responsibilities, and the head coach makes sure that everybody's doing their job, and if they do their jobs, then he does his job.
Right.
And that's really, really what the five-star model is. I mean, that's the Navy. That's everything I've ever learned and done. And in our world, it's a servant leadership model that we use, not the top-down command model. It's a servant leadership is leave your ego at the door, help everybody, be there for support, make yourself the least important person on the team. Everybody else is more important. Put your ego last. Coach, help, develop. And then that translates into being servant leaders for our clients and helping them. At the same time, you know, how do you, if we're going to do that, Rob, how do we fire clients? Well, that's because we're really truly servant leaders, and we're facing the fact that we can't be everything to everybody, and that if we're really going to be good at this, we have to limit the number of people that we serve. And then we serve them as true servant leaders would. At the same time, it's a mutually beneficial relationship, meaning you must help us to help you, meaning you've got to do a financial plan. You've got to give us all your assets because we can't manage your risk if you've got risk all over the place. You know, if you've got assets all over the street, scattered everywhere, how can we be responsible for managing your risk? It's not really fair.
Yep.
Okay. It'd be like telling Saban, you know, I want you to manage half the team. Okay. The other team is going to be in somebody else's school all year, and then you're going to be in charge of the whole thing at the end during the game. But you have no idea what the hell those people have been taught. They don't know half the plays, right?
Tell you to hit the road.
Exactly. And that's where I want you to get to. I want you to get to that point where you say, look, you know, you wouldn't ask Nick Saban to manage half of his kids, you know, or three-quarters of his kids. How can we manage three-quarters of your assets when we don't know where they rest are? I mean, they're going to show up for the game when they won't know anything. And you're going to hold us accountable for our piece of it, yet we have no idea what the rest is doing, how much risk you're taking. You could have all the rest of it on margin. Here we are being conservative, and your overall return is below average because you took too much risk on the other money. So it's a good argument. The words are very important that you use in our business, and the words that I developed for this particular topic are, you don't want your assets scattered. See, they say, well, I like to diversify my financial advisors, have more than one. And I said, well, that's kind of what we refer to that as scattering, not diversifying, scattering your risk all over the street.
Right. That's a good way to put it. We're trying to put that in place with some of the stuff we're doing with Supernova. So that's all, it all relates.
Yeah, because you can just see, you know, the picture of newspapers and things scattered all over the street, right?
Just right. In
crazy wind blowing and things being blown everywhere, and it's just a mess. And who knows? That's probably what their financial life looks like.
Right.
Scattered all over the street versus having one person manage the risk for you. That's our job.
Right.
We're really risk managers. Performance is important, just like getting you out of surgery is important, but we want to make sure that you don't die in surgery. That's as important as having a successful operation.
Right.
So managing the risk is part of it.
All right. We appreciate it, Rob. And speaking of that, we've got a client coming in and 2 minutes. We're all stepping out real quick, but thank you for the call today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad. I think it went well, and we'll begin on our monthly calls from this point on, and we'll go through what they should look like, okay?
Right. Thank you, Rob.
Thanks, guys. All right, okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.